Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
A college professor on the frustrations of teaching.
You know, the irony is they're paying for going there, but they love not being asked to do anything.
A laid off worker on overcoming addiction.
Cocaine, marijuana, you know, alcohol.
And an ER doctor on the role of ego in the emergency room.
It's not worth it just to protect your pride.
That's all ahead this week here on Backseat Rider, the podcast where I drive a Lyft car in Chicago, and whoever ends up in the backseat becomes the cast of this show. So this week, our thought starter comes from a listener named Paul, who suggested that I ask my riders about memorable advice that they've gotten in their lives.
Well, I'm going to go with some advice that one of my colleagues gave me at work, and this is strictly related to my business.
This passenger's business being selling electrical equipment to big clients like office buildings and schools. And like most jobs, this one is not without stress.
The university that is down power and I don't have the ability to get them up and running, and you know, the pressure's on for me to get that power back up and running, and we got to get it fixed now.
I had just picked him up from O'Hare, where he'd flown in from his hometown of Cleveland. He needed a ride from the airport to a hotel out in the western suburbs where he had a business meeting the following day.
From time to time, it's extremely challenging because no matter what the situation, whether it's lead time of equipment or issues that are unforeseen to us in the field, we are always the ones at fault. So we tend to get yelled at from time to time on things that we really had no control over. And one colleague of mine gave me advice that in this business you need to have some very thick skin and let things roll off your back to be able to survive in this business.
Advice that could probably apply to almost any job.
Almost a year ago, I actually just saw him yesterday, believe it or not. And to this day, I still tell him every time I see him that that was some quality advice that he gave me. And now it's been almost 20 years that I've been in this industry, so.
That's really great. What did he say when you said that?
He actually remembered telling me it. Because there was actually the day he told me I was getting my butt chewed out for something that I had nothing to do with. But we fixed the problem for the customer, and afterwards I asked him, you know, how in the world do you deal with this? You know, at that point he was probably in the industry for 30 plus years, and I said, how in the world do you deal with this? And that's when he came back and said, yeah, you need to have some thick skin and let that stuff roll off your back, because if you don't and let it eat at you, you're never going to be able to make it in the business. So, yeah, 19 plus years later, here I am headed out to Chicago for some meetings. So,
and what he said there reminded me exactly of what that circus performer said last week on the podcast about getting back in front of an audience after that disastrous performance that he told us about.
Somebody gave me the wise words of wisdom, which is, you know, if you perform your entire life, you're going to probably do, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 shows. So what's the worst thing that happens if you have one or two absolutely horrible out of 10,000? That still means you have, you know, 9,998 other good ones.
You know, when you have a hard day at work, when you have a rough day at work, when things don't go the way you have them planned, you need to kind of let it roll off your back. You need to let that stuff just go and, you know, tomorrow's a new day.
Mid-morning on a weekday, a ride request came in from Westtown. That's a neighborhood just a mile or two west of downtown. And when I pulled up to do the pickup, it was on a busy street corner right on Ashland, a man approached the car, and he, at least in appearance, he reminded me of John Goodman from The Big Lebowski. For people who haven't seen Big Lebowski, John Goodman's character has this crew cut a goatee and these aviator sunglasses. In my memory, this man looked just like that. And he was old enough that I had a feeling he had given and received a lot of advice over the years.
What is it, and why did it stick with you?
You know, my father told me years ago that everything is temporary. And I mean, you can go all the way down and be prophetic and say life is temporary. But even your current situation, as good or as bad as it is, it's all temporary. And be careful not to rub people's face in it when you're doing well. And realize that even when things are going bad, it's temporary and things will get better if you apply yourself.
So I love that.
Everything is temporary.
I love that. Yeah. I absolutely love
that. And that has stuck with me, you know, my whole life.
When did he convey that and how? How old were you? And walk me through when you remember him conveying that.
I was probably mid-20s, and I was suffering with substance abuse. And when I was going through all the problems, my dad was there to help me out. And he said, we'll get through it. Just remember everything's temporary.
So you were in your 20s?
Yeah, mid-20s.
And what do you mind if I ask what substance?
Pretty much anything that was available. Cocaine, marijuana, you know, alcohol. That was the primaries.
And so it was kind of a father-son, heart-to-heart kind of thing? Had you sought help? Did you seek him out? Or
yeah, he kind of got in there and helped me out. Between him and the current employer I had at the time, they kind of came to my rescue and saved my life. So,
what were you doing at the time?
I was a software engineer.
Okay.
Yep.
Is that still a career you're in?
Yes, still in software.
Okay, still in software. Got it.
Yep.
And now, since then, since that time where you were, you know, going through some things, can you think of other examples where you applied that? Maybe a time where you were doing so well and you thought to yourself, hey, don't rub it in anyone's face. Don't get high on your horse.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, the last job I had, I was doing really well. I was pretty successful. And at the same time, there's always that piece in the back of my mind, you know, everything's temporary. And sure enough, there's some changes in management. And, you know, they decided to go a different direction. And I found myself out of work. And actually, I'm on my way to an interview today. So
you are.
Yeah. So hopefully that's going to work out. And hopefully the unemployment is temporary as well.
That's really cool. I feel like you're really walking the walk.
You know what? It's you know, I got two sons. They're not mine. They're you know, they're mine by acceptance, not biology, I guess. And I watch them. They've gone through their own struggles and things like that. And I've always been able to go back and apply it. And if you really can sit down with an open mind and say, okay, look, I'm an intelligent, capable human being. I can make something out of myself. I can make something out of this life. You can dig out of any hole. But at the same time, when things are going well, don't forget to turn around and, you know, do something for somebody and realize that good things come to an end as well. So
he's in his mid-50s now, so he got that piece of advice from his dad about 30 years ago.
What did your dad do for a living?
My dad was a mailman.
Okay.
He used to tell people he was a federal communications expediter, which is pretty much the same thing. Yeah. But other piece of advice I got, I got a piece of advice from my best friend's dad. I always called him Uncle. I'm not even going to say his name because that'll give him away. But,
sure.
I always referred to, you know, close friends like that, uncle and aunt stuff. Mm-hmm. But he told me, he said, you know, when I was going off to college, he said, don't come back an educated dummy. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, you can get the education, you can be smart, but that doesn't mean you can be intelligent without being smart. That's kind of was his point. So don't think just because you got an education that you're smarter than everybody. Give a lot of people credit. Give everybody credit. You know, the homeless guy on the street, you don't know who he is and his story. So don't assume that he's an idiot. You know, he's in a temporary situation, hopefully, right? So,
right. Right, absolutely. I mean, I'm thinking when you say an educated dummy, I'm just thinking of a lot of educated dummies in Washington, D.C.
Well, they've got some right here in politics in Chicago and about anywhere you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think intelligence comes from experience as much as anything else, and not just experience in your line of work, but experience in how you deal with people, things you've gone through in your life, just everything.
One that comes to mind is that you shouldn't be afraid to do the things that scare you.
This is a 23-year-old finance worker, and I had picked him up one night from this nondescript office building way out in the far western suburbs. This is the kind of building you see off the highway, you know, with a lot of tinted windows. So that night, he needed a ride back to his apartment on the north side of the city.
And namely, what comes to mind in that is I've done a couple different things in my life where it depends on where you're from and your background and everything, but from my experience, doing them was kind of intimidating. And so, you know, people would just tell me, like, don't be afraid to do what you want to do. So I moved from a small town to Chicago, didn't know anyone. And then from there, moved to England for half a year, didn't know anyone there. And these were all things I wanted to do, but didn't really know what I was getting myself into and chose to do it anyway, just kind of based on that motto. So,
where did you first hear that, to do what scares you?
My mom.
And what did she, how did that come out? Like, take me back to that conversation.
Sure. So it was kind of determining, like, where I wanted to go to school, college.
So this would have been when you were about 18 or so?
Exactly, yeah. And I had had some experience, like, getting outside of the state I'm from and everything like that. But still, like, going off to a big city, like I said, I was from a small town. It's just kind of like an intimidating thing. So that was just kind of pushed me over the edge and encouraged me to go for it.
The house where that conversation happened, its parents still live in, and it's only an hour away from the Canadian border. It's in the middle of the woods. And he says that seeing black bear and cougars wasn't all that rare right around his house. And he actually says that some nights as a boy, he would hear cougar pups crying in the distance.
They sound very creepy. It sounds like, if you can imagine, like a 7-year-old girl like screaming. That's literally what it sounds like.
That's what a cougar pup sounds like?
It is. It makes your blood curdle, that's for sure.
And you've actually seen a cougar once?
I have seen a cougar, yeah. We have like trails that go through our woods and everything. And just walking down one day, like maybe 40 yards ahead of, I was walking with my brother, and one like leapt over the trail like to the other side. And like you just see like that long brown body and a 3-foot long like tail. It's crazy.
Did it scare you?
Yeah. We backed out of there very slowly because you're not supposed to run away. So you just back up very slowly and just head the other direction. Usually you'll be fine.
And what about black bear?
I've seen several. My parents have seen a lot of black bear. Like we have them come through our backyard and down our road and everything. So that's pretty common.
Going from that environment to a major city like Chicago or London, where he had done this study abroad program for about 8 months, wasn't an easy or obvious transition from such a remote hometown. But having done it successfully, at least up until this point, he had this to say to other people who might be considering taking a risk in life.
I said, why wouldn't you? You don't have that many opportunities to do the things you want to do in your life. Eventually, you're going to run out of time to do those things, or you know, you're going to have obligations or stressors, financial or otherwise, that won't allow you to do those things. So yeah, if you have the opportunity, go for it, no matter if you have reservations or not.
It's kind of just ingrained in who I am and how I live my life at this point.
This man is 37, and I picked him up from Hyde Park one morning for a ride downtown. His job is an ER doctor, works at a Chicago hospital, and this is a job where, as you can probably imagine, involves dealing with hostile patients fairly often.
The angriest ones are the ones that just want some sort of controlled prescription for abuse purposes.
The piece of advice that has always stuck with him came from his best friend's grandfather.
And it was just about losing your temper or getting upset at somebody or, you know, kind of festering about something for a while, and basically had said, you know, it's your choice how you're going to react, and it only hurts you to, or, you know, it only hurts you in the sense that you're going to be the one that's upset about it. It doesn't affect the other person, so why do you want to walk around being upset kind of by choice type of thing? So I don't really let that much stuff get to me. If, you know, if someone cuts you off in traffic, just let it go. It's not worth it. Go on about your day and be happy and stuff.
How old were you when you, your best friend's grandfather said that? And will you tell the story of how that piece of advice came to be delivered?
I was 18. My family when we lived in Atlanta, moved back here when I was 17, and I didn't want to go, so I moved in with my best friend's family. They were kind enough to let me sleep in their basement, and so they kind of pseudo-adopted me, and their grandparents would come down a lot. And I don't remember what I was being upset about, but I had, you know, a normal 18-year-old male temper about stupid things. I don't remember the incident, but the advice made a lot of sense, because he would tell stories. He was, his dad beat his mom and him, and he left at, like, 16 to stay in school, because his dad wanted to get a job in the factory. He lived with some prostitutes, in, like, the brothel, and they took care of him. So he has, like, a crazy story. And he was a World War II pilot, and all of his friends, you know, died and got shot down. But he's very positive, the whole time, kind of, I think that's his nature, but, some guys would, like, try and pick fights with him at a bar, and he would just kind of, you know, de-escalate with comedy, or, like, yeah, not worth it, or something. And so he was good about not having to prove yourself or anything. It's okay to walk away, like, you know, it's not worth it, just to protect your pride.
I played tennis, and how many hours I spent on the courts hitting serves just over and over and over and over again. Try to find a student who's willing to read a text over and over and over again, or write a paper repeatedly, trying to improve it. You won't find them. They think that mental development should come easy, and physical development should take work.
This is a professor of philosophy. He is 61 years old. He teaches at a college in Kansas, and he was in Chicago that day for some type of seminar. That night, he needed a ride from the Loop to the airport, so we were going to have a good deal of time in the car together. So before I jumped into the whole advice topic, I started out with some basic questions about life as a college professor.
How long have you been teaching?
I've been teaching now for 29 years.
And have you noticed a change in the students? I graduated college in 2000. And if so, will you describe that change?
I'm sure that everybody thinks the students, you know, in their past were better than the students currently. And to some extent, I'm no exception. I don't think that our educational system, K through 12, is necessarily producing good quality college-prepared students on the whole. I have no doubts that very selective universities and colleges cull the cream off of that. But I find that students' abilities in terms of attention span, some basic skills, don't seem to be as developed now as they were, say, 25 years ago.
Are there any skills that are more developed? I mean, I've heard of things with this current generation where, yeah, attention span's down, but productivity is up.
I don't think productivity is up, at least in the academic world. And that might be, it's sort of like saying, well, students can multitask, so now
right.
they can do all sorts of things. And but I don't find that their papers when they're multitasking are any better than their papers were before. I do think that the current students have different characteristics that aren't necessarily educationally connected.
Such as?
I think a lot of students now, I don't think it's simply a stereotype, have a greater interest in getting involved, changing society in some ways. There's that sort of level of activity and engagement is higher. They're a little more idealistic than they were in the 80s and 90s, maybe going back to the idealism of the 60s or something like that. But But there is there's a different quality. It doesn't mean they write better papers, but they at least show some interest and engagement.
We had left downtown and were at this point merging onto the Kennedy Expressway to head out to the airport. And that's when I asked him what advice he gives to his students.
I liken their coming to my college as though they were joining a golf club. I give them a metaphor, an analogy. And I say, what your fees have entitled you to is to play the course and to get help from the coaches along the way. And when you're in my class, that's only one hole on your play. And all I can do is try to improve your performance in the context of this one hole. But I said, what you haven't purchased is the right to a score. You haven't. You've bought the right to play the game on this course with these coaches, and we're here to try to improve your skills as much as we can. But at the end of the day, it's going to come to talent and work, and hopefully good coaching. But that's all you're going to get out of education, and. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people think that what they really want is that that diploma without actually acquiring much of the way of education. You know, oddly enough, I think education is one of those things that people don't want to get what they pay for. You know, the irony is they're paying for going there, but they love not being asked to do anything. So the less you ask of me, the less you expect of me, the more classes you cancel, the happier I am. So here I'm going to pay you a lot of money. Just don't give me anything for it, apart from a diploma.
So to curb that kind of thinking, which I admit that I had when I was in college, I was always the kind of student that just wanted to figure out the shortest path to get to a decent enough grade. He says that in his class, he employs this piece of advice that he read that always stuck with him.
Well, what it is you know, I've read philosophy and I did that for my doctoral degree. And a philosopher that I encountered is named Alfred North Whitehead. And he's written a bit on education, although that's not what I studied. I was looking more at his social and political ideas. Okay. But he once made the statement when it came to education that it's more important that something be interesting than that it be true. And I always thought that was a good piece of advice that I give students. Because they're always concerned about being right. And they think that the most important thing is having an answer. And I think it's more important that you understand the questions and that you say something that's of interest.
So, well, how would you respond to someone who listens to that or considers that piece of philosophy or piece of advice and says, no, truth is just as important, if not more, than being interesting? If something's interesting and false, especially in this era of fake news or blah, 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 then that's worse. How would you respond to that person?
Well, I'd respond that, first of all, that truth can be a component within interest. Often things that are true ultimately prove to be more interesting than things that are not. They have a longevity to them. Things that are false tend to fall away and become uninteresting as a result. But I'm thinking more in the context of something that stimulates thought. Some people, one of my colleagues says that interesting is a terrible word. It's bland. It doesn't actually say anything. And my response is that for me, the idea of interest is that it stimulates reflection. And so I think in terms of trying to engage people in thought to as a process of education, that throwing out an interesting idea that provokes or stimulates conversation is often more important than simply saying something that's true but bland.
All right, coming up, we are going to switch gears to something that I haven't tried recently. Now that we have gotten to know this week's cast of Backseat Riders to some extent, I had each of these folks take a crack at a completely unrelated question that came up in conversation a number of times with some of my friends this past week, and I thought it was an interesting question. Okay. With the sex misconduct scandal still making headlines, I asked each of this week's Backseat Riders. So again, we're talking about an ER doctor, a professor, a salesman, a financial analyst, an unemployed guy, and some other passengers I drove this week, to answer the following sort of hypothetical question. Which public figure are you most hoping doesn't get accused in the scandal?
I would have to say I would be very sad if Obama was considered one of them. I'd be very sad.
Think about it during the break. Which celebrity or public figure would it just crush you to find out is some kind of predator?
Wow, that's a good one. That's a good question.
Hi, this is Ben Domenech, the host of the Federalist Radio Hour. We're a daily show coming to you 5 days a week from Washington, D.C., where we interview our nation's top journalists, politicians, authors, chefs, economists, entertainers, and more. If you're looking for a contrarian discussion on news, politics, or culture, give us a listen and subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back, and maybe have your answer to the public figure you are most hoping never gets accused of any kind of misconduct. All right, here's what our Backseat Rider said, and we start with the young ER doctor.
As far as celebrities, I mean, I like, I don't know if it's Jerry Seinfeld or something. I grew up liking him. That would be sad.
That'd be sad.
It would probably, you know, like, if you're just a comedian or a celebrity, it's less a big deal than if you're supposed to be a role model. Like, you know, for example, if Obama did that, that would suck because he seems like a genuine good guy and his job is to be more of a role model than an entertainer.
Right, right.
It'd have to be someone I look up to for their morals and quality as opposed to someone that I was just entertained by, which is kind of the category I put celebrities in.
FYI, Obama was a recurring answer, which is no surprise here in Chicago. But moving on, here's our philosophy professor from Kansas.
You know, I think I'd be really crushed if I discovered that Elizabeth Warren was preying on young boys. All right, I like Elizabeth Warren, and I'd be quite crushed if she was uncovered, so to speak.
Not everybody picked politicians, though. Here is our 23-year-old finance worker from way far north in Minnesota.
I guess who comes to mind, who's been like an inspiration to me, and like I've been a fan of his for a long time. Like Chris Martin of Coldplay. And it seems like
you look like him.
Oh, really? What?
Yeah.
I've never heard that one before, but thanks. I'll take that as a compliment.
Sure.
But yeah, I guess I would say him. Like, I've listened to their music for as long as I can remember, and he always seemed like such a guy that wouldn't get into that type of a situation. And, you know, he's always kind of like a source of good energy and whatever you'd like to call it. So I guess that would kind of be shocking to my system, and I would lose complete faith in the celebrity sphere.
You know, somebody, I would hate to see somebody from the past, probably. I guess current figure, not so much, but somebody like, you know, like, a George Burns or somebody who always had such a good, was held in such high esteem by everybody. I'd hate to see them tarnished after the fact when there's no chance for defense. But in the current public, you know, like, you know, if somebody's doing something wrong, take them out. You know, take them out. But I guess I also believe that we in the today's age with social media, we tend to, we try people long before they have their day in court. And when you've got people losing a job or losing a career or having their life tarnished because somebody says something, you know, if somebody accused somebody of murder, they get their day in trial. So, you know, I don't know. I'm disenchanted a little bit by a lot of stuff I see going on.
Finally this week, our salesman from Cleveland.
I guess I'm going to have to go back to my Cleveland roots on this one.
Okay.
LeBron James. LeBron James, that would shock me because of the fact of, you know, I grew up just outside of Akron where LeBron James is from. And LeBron James, through all of his hype, you know, through high school, in high school, the guy was on ESPN. Right. I remember watching him on ESPN when he was in high school. So all the hype of him, you know, getting into to St. Vincent, St. Mary, and being on national television and, you know, saying he was going to be the number one draft pick and the heir apparent to Michael Jordan back when he was in high school. And yet he still stayed with his high school sweetheart through all of that. Gets drafted, does all that, and marries his high school sweetheart and has two kids and still lives in Cleveland, Ohio, or just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, in Bath. So, yeah, you know, a guy that's really, you know, obviously in the spotlight throughout the country because of his sports and the world, actually, but very much in the spotlight in the Cleveland area. And, yeah, if that was ever to come out or something like that, that LeBron James would, yeah, that would shock me pretty good, so... I'm going to have to go with LeBron James on that one.
All right, backseat riders, I would love to hear your take on either of this week's questions. Piece of advice that's always stuck with you and public figure you would be crushed to see go down. Give me a shout on social media. Leave me a comment in the backseat rider community, which I'll tell you how to do in just a second. I'm going to answer one of those. Advice. My dad said something to me when I was 21, and it always stuck with me. And it's kind of along the lines of that guy who said, or whose dad said, everything is temporary. It's kind of along those lines. So I graduated from college. I was totally disillusioned with the quote unquote real world. I took this job. It was a marketing job at a company that made this software product that I barely understood. So I just remember being on the L and I was jam-packed on the train, not happy to be going to my job. And I remember looking around and seeing all these people with these blank stares looking just as miserable as I was. And I just remember thinking to myself, is this what people are supposed to do? Are we just supposed to get these educations, then cram into a metal box with wheels on it, and then go into the crowded city to work at a job they don't really like that much? Is this why I went to college? So it was that whole quarter life crisis thing. And so I distinctly remember my dad saying at the time, there's no mistakes in life, just choices. There's no mistakes in life, just choices. So that stuck with me. And whenever I'm in a valley in my personal life or career life or whatever, I tend to come back to that piece of wisdom. Again, I would love to hear your take on either of this week's topics. So if you haven't already, join the Backseat Rider community on Facebook. That is where listeners talk about what is said on the show. And all you have to do to find it is search Facebook groups for Backseat Rider. Request to join, and then myself or Beth, who is one of the group moderators, will approve you. And one other really quick housekeeping thing. Again, Lyft is not a sponsor of this show, has nothing to do with the content, but if you haven't signed up for Lyft yet, and if you want to support Backseat Rider, please sign up for Lyft using my promo code. It's easy to remember, it's just the name of this podcast, Backseat Rider. All one word. It is for new users of the Lyft app, and that code is good for $50 in free ride credit. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin, and also thank you so much to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. Look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app. And if you have an iPhone, make sure that you are subscribed on Apple Podcasts.